Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
This is NRL Boom Rookies.
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of Boom Rookies presented by ESPN. My name is Matt Bungard and with me today, Nick Campton. Hello.
A Merry Anzac Day Eve to you all.
Yep, as I mentioned last week, the schedule is a little bit different this week. We will be doing a full preview show today and a full wrap-up show of all eight games on Monday. So now you have to wait a while to get that Warriors-Titans recap, but I promise you all, it'll be worth it. It's a big schedule tomorrow.
How could it not be?
Warriors-Titans,
no love lost there.
No, they don't like each other one bit.
It is. I do like the Warriors have been pushing really hard to get an Anzac Day game in New Zealand.
And I'm glad that they got one.
For ages and ages. I'm glad they got one too. They haven't had one in a really long time. But when they do get one, the league's like, all right, you can have Gold Coast.
Some of their fans are worried they're going to lose.
Yeah, I know. But I think that's because of like 25 years of
Anzac Day trauma.
Well, no, just being trained to expect the Warriors to slip up all the time. You know,
yeah,
you would hope they've had their slip up game and that they'll be unslipped in this one. But we'll have to wait and see.
We sure will. And we will preview that in just a second. We're going to skip the jingle this week because this is a very serious story. But in lieu of our regular What About This Bloke, we thought we'd start the show by just talking about one of our preeminent guys who tragically passed away just a couple of hours ago at the far too young age of 52. And that is the legendary Terry Hill.
Yeah. So Terry Hill is probably far too qualified to be spoken about in what about this guy terms. He played 14 origins. He played 8 tests for Australia. He won premierships. He was top try scorer 1 year. Like, he was a really good player. One of the top centers of the 90s. But when I think about like the spirit of being a dude or the spirit of this segment, I think Terry Hill really does sum up what it's all about. Like, you could make a case that he's king of the guys, you know, king of the dudes.
Yeah. I mean, he was a key part of the footy show when it was at its absolute peak. Everyone remembers the gold jacket, going down to the Dapto Dogs, all that stuff. He was a spokesman for Lowe's for years and years and years and just had so many great moments both on and off the field. And he's actually a really influential figure in the sport as we know it, Nick, because, of course, we could live in a world with a player draft if not for Terry Hill.
Yeah, this has become an underrated part of Terry Hill's footy legacy. So it's like, we'll start at the start of his career.
He had
a debut for Souths in 1990, played a full year at 18 years old. I think he was sort of an inner city junior who bounced around a few of the different junior leagues in Sydney. Year with Souths, then signed with Wests, but the New South Wales Rugby League introduced its only ever player draft for that season. So all the guys who were free agents or signing with other clubs for 91 were entered into this draft, and he got picked up by the Roosters, and he challenged it, I think it was at the Fair Trade or something like that, and ended up getting thrown out. And the reason that the NRL has never seriously considered going back to a draft again is because they can't, because Terry Hill won that ruling, you know.
So the High Court ruled on it.
Yeah, it's a massive victory for player empowerment, for players being able to choose their own destiny and choose their own path, and something that's impacted the game in an absolutely massive, massive way, all because Terry Hill, as a very young man, mind you, like, he was only 19 when this case would have been going on, had the sort of strength to stand up and say, no, I don't want to do this. I don't want to go where you're telling me to go. I want to go where I want to go, you know?
Yeah, and we both agree that a draft in a sport that relies on junior development is very silly, because it demotivates the clubs that invest in junior development from doing so in the future. So who knows what state the sport would be in if not for that case.
Like, everything could be different. It's one of the real divergent points.
Yeah,
absolutely. But it's a couple of years at Wests after that with Warren Ryan. He ends up getting that move that he wanted. But then he goes to Manly, and Manly is where I think most people
absolutely
will remember him. He really, really blossomed there.
Yeah, won premierships, played donned the mustard and blue of City Origin in 5 consecutive years, and the sky blue of New South Wales on 14 occasions between 1993 and 2000. So, yeah, a very good career. Manly had a try every second game, which especially a pretty good strike rate for a centre, and was just a thoroughly entertaining player and a guy that I was kind of excited to get back in 2004, but of course that didn't really work out.
That's right, it's all about Souths. Even when we're talking about Terry.
Well, I think, yes, he played for them. So yes, it is. But
go on.
Well, it's very funny. It was like, that was like the peak of like Souths being an absolute comedy show in the early 2000s, was like signing Terry Hill on big money. And he never plays a game, has a groin injury in preseason, medically retires from the sport, and then lobs up again at Manly the following year and plays 16 games. Terrific stuff.
He was good that year too. I remember being so excited when he was doing that, because by that point I was very sort of deep in rugby league history, and you know, I thought I knew a lot about it. And I, you know, watched a lot of old games of Terry Hill and read a lot about him and all that. And then having him come out of retirement, like, oh wow, this guy played in 97 and he played in 96 and he did the draft thing. And it was, I remember being so excited about it. You were probably less excited, it's fair to say.
I think so at the time. I was quite young. I mean, but it was just very funny. But like, that's classic early 2000 Souths. But of course, as well, West Tigers number 4.
Yeah. I would say the big name signing for that first Tigers year.
Yeah, because of course the Tigers in their first ever game, they just did the cap numbers based on the positional positions in the team. So he was playing in the centers, and he was
Tiger
the fourth
number
ever.
Four.
Tiger number 4.
That's cool. Yeah. So Joel Kane's Tiger number 1.
Yeah, it's Joel Kane's number 1, and John Carlos number 2, and Big Owen Craigie's number 3.
That is it. And then who's number 5? Is it one of the McGuinnesses?
It's John Hopewadi, and then Kevin McGuinness 6, Craig Field 7.
What a starting 7, dude.
Yeah.
You've got some characters in there. Damn.
Yeah, and then there's a Shane Walker, not that one, playing prop. So, there you go.
What do you remember about Terry's career specifically as a player?
I remember Terry Hill more in Origin than in the NRL, just purely because, especially when he was, there's obviously not that many highlight reels from when we were younger. My main memory of Terry Hill is when he tried to fight Gordon Tallis in 1999.
Yes, I'm so glad you brought that up, because that's a seminal memory for me too.
Because honestly, like, I'm not being funny here, because we didn't have Foxtel, right? So my exposure to watching rugby league as a kid was the Footy Show and whatever one or two games on Channel 9 that week. I didn't realize Terry Hill was such a good player, because he was just like the funny man on the Footy Show.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I'm watching Origin in 99 and he's fighting Gordon Tallis. I'm like, oh shit, this guy's actually legit. Like, holy shit.
That's the 99 series is the first Origin series where I remember like living and dying on the result of every game, you know? And there's the, I can't remember which game it is, but he shapes up to Gordy and they don't actually throw punches, but they're like,
they just grab each other and nose to nose for like a minute. Yeah.
And there's a great photo of the two of them doing it. And that to me was like, that summed up everything Origin was about when I was a kid. You know, it was all the intensity and the emotion and the spirit and all of that. I think you can see all of it in that photo, you know, just two dudes just going for it, you know? So
and that was a great series too. Like, I remember it unfortunately ends in a draw and a drawn series, but you know, it's three games. Like, we get the Matt Rogers field goal where they didn't score a try and won 9-8. And then the Blues grind out a 12-8 victory in game 2. And then of course the 10-all draw in game 3. Lovely stuff.
I remember not understanding the idea of, Queensland won it last year, so they also win it this year.
I hated it. I genuinely hated it. It was ridiculous. How did we allow this to happen?
I remember multiple people explaining it to me and me just not getting it. So it's like,
wait,
oh, yeah,
did
so
you not get
so
it or like, did you just like a, not like
there's
it?
Like a, there's like a fourth game next week, right? Like that's what's going to happen.
Correct.
No, dude, how do you explain to a 6-year-old? No, in a draw, the champion retains. Like,
yeah, it's ridiculous.
What does retain mean?
And then it happened again 3 years later. They scored on the bell and Lottie Security missed the kick.
At the game, it happens. First Origin I went to.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, in terms of like specific playing memories, there's a my big one for Terry Hill actually comes after sort of the Manly Golden is. It's 99, so Manly aren't great. And they play a game against Brisbane at Brookvale Oval quite late in the season. It's like around 24 or 25 or something. And Brisbane are fighting hard to try and scrape into the finals. They had a bad start to the year and then ended up winning like nearly 10 straight to go on and do it. And they're playing Manly, and they're up like, I think it's 26-6 or 26-10 with about 20 minutes to go. And Manly just turn it on deluxe. And Terry Hill ends up scoring a 70-meter solo try right in front of the hill, carries Darren Lockyer over the line and scores. And then a guy named Brendan Reeves, who went on to be a teacher at St. Greg's, he kicked the goal from the sideline to level it up. And it's one of those, they must have replayed like the condensed replay on Fox Sports a lot or something like that. Or maybe I just watched a replay of it a lot when I was a kid, but I remember it so, so vividly. Like that image of him in the maroon jersey, the sun's out, the hill is like just going absolutely apeshit, and him just flying down that sideline.
Yeah, I've just pulled it up. It's 26-8 with 16 minutes left.
Yeah, well, there you go. Like unbelievable, you know? Like,
Sea Eagles fan on YouTube has uploaded the whole game.
Sea Eagles fan is one of our great rugby league archivists. I'm presuming it's a he. His YouTube channel is just goddamn. Like, there is so much stuff up there. A man could lose his mind, like, just poking around the Sea Eagles fan YouTube channel.
Yeah, I've just pulled up that. I've just got to the moment with the Terry Hill try. I'm just watching it now as we continue on talking. Brisbane in those yellow jerseys as well. Like, this is proper late 90s heritage.
It really is, yeah. It really takes.
Oh, my God, look at him go.
I'm telling you, like, he was slowing down a bit by then. He played a fair bit of lock when he was at West, but he still had the gas when you really, really needed it. He's the sort of guy, like, if he came along today and you had a guy who could play lock and center and probably second row, imagine how valuable he'd be.
Because he was a big boy. He was a big fella. Big dude. 6 foot something, and he weighed about 110 kilos.
Real athlete would throw himself around, you know. And we talked about the marks of, like, being a dude, like jumping around a lot of different clubs. That makes you a dude. Coming out of retirement, that makes you a dude, you know. Having one last season with the club that you did your best work with after years elsewhere, that makes you a dude, you know. Just
and being a fixture on the footy show, that 100%, also helps.
Man,
RIP Terry Hill. We don't really have any details beyond that he's died of a heart attack while traveling in the Philippines, but awful stuff. And rest in peace to an absolute legend.
All the best. All the best to anyone who knew Terry.
Okay, moving on to tomorrow, 2 p.m., the first of our Anzac Day triple header. Warriors, Titans. The Warriors are short-priced favorites. Well, you got a close up experience with the Gold Coast Titans as they are currently composed just 2 weeks ago, and then again last week with the Coltrane Cup. So basically, you've been fading the Titans for two consecutive weeks, and they've come pretty close to breaking your heart on both occasions, Nick. So how are you feeling against one of the teams you like a lot in the Warriors, up against the Titans again, a third week in a row? Will they break your heart this time?
Well, I'm conflicted. I've got to say, like, it's no secret I do have a soft spot for the Warriors, but Titans have Tana Boyd. You know, I'm choosing between something I like and something I love. You know, it's hard to say. Boyd's in the six, you know, less responsibility.
Freeze him up.
Yeah, freeze him up to play, mate. Oh, look, the Titans have been better. And
they have.
There is a win coming for them at some point, I would think relatively soon. Brimson back at fullback is a really good move. That just makes them so much more dangerous. If they just start Dave Fifita and just play him for 80 and just deal with the consequences, I think that'll get them a lot closer as well. I don't think this will be the one, though. We talked about the Warriors finally getting that Anzac Day game. I think it'll be a massive, massive occasion over there. I was sarcastic before about the Titans going over, but honestly, I don't think it was going to matter who the Warriors were going to play. You know, this is something the clubs wanted for a really, really long time. And we think of Anzac Day as just an Australian thing. It's not. It's big in New Zealand as well. And you won't believe this. This game's a sellout as well.
No way.
Yep. I think it'll be a big riotous atmosphere. I think the Warriors have a little bit of a point to prove after 2 weeks where I think they've been pretty far from their best, not to take anything away from the teams that beat them, but I think both weeks they've been a little bit out of sorts. And I would, if I was a Warriors fan, I would expect a bit of a return to form. I would expect them to come out and really do what they do well. Don't give the Titans a sniff. Don't give them a chance. Don't allow them to draw you into some sort of shootout like they were able to do with Manly last week, or to a lesser extent they were able to do with Canberra the week before. Go out there and dictate terms. Play your game. Don't worry about theirs. Get them out of here. You know, if I was warrior inclined, that's what I'd be after.
The thing about terms is it's better when you dictate them rather than getting them dictated to you.
You know, that's controversial, but, like, I agree with it.
Yeah. I think this will be closer than the sort of betting markets are indicating. I think the Titans have strung together a couple of good performances in the last couple of weeks. I know they haven't got the win, but they've been so much better than they were to start the season. I see the Warriors winning this game by like 8-10, I reckon, something like that.
Dylan Walker back on the bench is big for them.
Yeah, that's good.
They've lacked a bit of punch from their bench recently. I really like this Zion Mayu, who's on there too. He's just a big, mean dude who throws himself around. I actually think they'll be a little bit better with Jacob Laban at second row and not Kurt Capewell. I think Capewell
has had a tough season.
He's been quite underwhelming. And so having someone with Laban's youthful energy and mobility, I think will be a big boost. So I'm taking the Warriors probably by a little bit more than what you're saying, but pretty confident about it.
All right, let's progress to 4:05 p.m. The Dragons, the Roosters, the Sydney Football Stadium, very close to a sellout. I had a look the other day. It was single seats only, but for all intents and purposes, we'll call it a sellout. This game often is. I'm excited for this. I think the Dragons actually have a genuine chance in this.
I'm always excited for this game. I think it's one of the very few regular season games that always feels like a real occasion.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm with you. I think Saints are going to get them. I think Saints are too tough for them.
Yep. 100% agree. You can often throw the form book out when these two teams meet on Anzac Day. Like we've seen a million times in the past, like the one that's doing worse in the regular season handles the business on Anzac Day. But these two teams haven't really been that different in the regular season to date. I think they've both had some really awful performances and some strong wins. The Dragons actually have more wins than the Roosters as we speak, 4-3. And I think that becomes 5-3 this week. I just think that the Roosters are still struggling to put it all together. And I think the Dragons have found somewhat of a formula for success with everything they're doing. And I don't think that with the way Ben Hunt, Zach Lomax are playing, that there's really a counterpunch to that that the Roosters possess.
It's a real contrast because man to man, the Roosters have an enormous
absolutely
advantage in almost every position on the field. But if you just look at the way the two teams have been playing, the Dragons are playing with a far greater cohesion. I think a far greater resilience, more of a willingness to work together and work for one another. I think the Roosters can have outstanding individual efforts, but gelling all that together has been really, really hard for them. And they do get Sam Walker back and they do get Dom Young back. And, you know, those are two big inclusions. But unless the Roosters sort of really go to that style of playing through the middle third of the field and really using their power to lay the platform, which when they've done it has worked to great effect, but they just don't do it that often. You know, I can definitely see the Dragons almost winning this on consistency, you know, the consistency of effort through the 80 minutes. And, you know, if you told me I'd be saying that 8 weeks ago, I would have thought you'd have rocks in your head, you know,
but absolutely. Like,
you can only judge the teams on what you've seen them do. And the Dragons have just gotten far, far more out of themselves than the Roosters have this season. Like, you can make the case that the Roosters have had a tougher draw, you know, maybe some tougher opponents than the Dragons have, but you know, I don't know. I think the Dragons have got the consistency to handle the tricolors. And
yeah, for sure, mate. And what the Dragons did last week against the Warriors to me is much more impressive than any performance that the Roosters have had this year. And it wasn't just that the margin of victory at the end and the tries that they scored in the second half. It was the way that they turned the Warriors away time and time again in the first 20 minutes of the game. That, to me, was more impressive than anything else they did, because in a way, they just laid the platform for everything else. Because if they're like 14, 16 points down in that game, which on another day, if their application wasn't up to scratch, they very much could have been, then that game's entirely different. But to hold the Warriors to 6 points in that time period where they were just completely all over them was just unbelievably impressive. And it just paved the way for them to do what they wanted to do after that. And I think this will be tough. I think this will be a low-scoring game, and I don't think...
Yeah, me too.
Although last year, from memory, it was quite open, wasn't it?
Last year was really open, but the year before that, the last one that they played at the SCG, and the Dragons were playing like absolute busted asses going into it, but they just sort of... It turned into a bit of a dogfight, and Ben Hunt had a really great game, one of those games where he just sort of says, follow me, boys, and come on. And I think they ended up winning like 14-10 or something like that. So these games can go both directions. But like coming back to dictating terms again, I feel like the team that sort of sets the tone is the one that will determine the tone. You know, so if it starts it's open and fancy free, we could get a shootout. But I don't think either team will come into it with that attitude. So I think it will be tight, and I think a tight, slow scoring game favors Saints.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm locking them into like a 18-16, something like that.
Yeah, I'll go even lower. I'll go like Ooh. I'll go like a 12-10.
Check out Barbados Slim over here.
Yeah, with a crucial Zach Lomax penalty goal to make the difference.
I like that. I like that a whole lot.
One more thing before we move on this game. Fa'amanu Brown debuted off the bench for the Dragons last week. I've got a bit of a feature about him on the ABC Sports website. I would really, really encourage you all to go give it a read because he's got a very remarkable story, even if you just go away from his NRL career, which is already pretty remarkable. In 10 years in the big time, he's played at eight different clubs. Well, he's played for eight different clubs. He's changed teams nine times. He's spent time in Super League and UK Second Division and New South Wales Cup. At one point, he had a leg injury so bad that some doctors told him he'd never walk again, and five surgeons said he'd never play footy again. And it's to say nothing of like his family background, which is it's a credit to him that he's such a together and inspiring person after the things that happened to him. And it's the sort of story that really makes sport great. It makes rugby league great. So even if you think you know the Fa'amanu Brown story, go check this out, because I guarantee you'll come away a little bit.
I've opened it in a Chrome tab to read after we finished recording. But while you were talking, I did press Control F and type the word microwave, and nothing came up. So I'm kind of mad at you.
I stayed away from that. It was a serious story.
Oh well, you know.
Do you want to talk me through that?
Oh, the greatest, one of the great rugby league moments. Because we didn't mention the lobsters with Terry Hill, but my favorite version of a rugby league scandal is a funny one where no one really gets hurt. We can all just have a laugh about it. Like the extreme is like Martin Kennedy, the Lizard King, which is still quite a large crime, but still very funny.
Yep.
And like in the middle, you've got Terry Hill and his mate stealing lobsters, which again, just hilarious. But at the very, very low end of this, you have Fa'amanu Brown, who saw a Facebook meme that said that if you put your phone in the microwave, it will charge it. And he did.
What happened to his phone, Bert?
It was destroyed, Nick.
He was a young man back then.
He was 21.
He was a young man.
He was apparently fighting over the only charger in the house with his teammate, Valentine Holmes, at the time.
Jeez. Look, he's one of nine kids, so he's used to fighting for what he gets, you know?
Yeah, he put a Facebook status up. So I seen a video on Facebook that if you put your iPhone in the microwave for 1 sec, it will charge your phone. It looked fully legit. So what did I do? I put my phone in the microwave and next minute it blew up. Glad Apple Store looked after me and replaced my phone. Hashtag why so stupid.
I think he has a good sense of humor about it.
Yeah, of course. It's a very funny story. But yeah, I love that. I just can't ever not think of New Brown and think of that story. But I love that he's back, man. He's always shown some talent when he gets a chance.
That's it. And I think he's a good pickup for Saints. I was surprised. I actually found this out when I was speaking to him. Saints wanted to sign him at the end of last year, and it just didn't work out for whatever reason. So he ended up in Hull. But I've always thought he was an NRL player. And with the way that benches are made up these days, having someone who can cover hooker and lock and the halves, nice guy to have. So,
yeah.
New Brown, we love you.
Absolutely. Okay, let's get this over with. Storm, Souths. Well, first of all, don't believe everything you read, people, because Jairo was supposed to be out for the season, legally dead, medically retired. He's gone to shoot tennis full time. Those are the stories you read like 6 weeks ago. He's playing. So, yeah, that's a lesson in that, I think.
What's the lesson?
Don't believe every like salacious story that comes out about a player.
Did it count as salacious?
It said
felt like there were more salacious things going on with Souths.
Just because things can be more salacious. Oh, well, speaking of which, there weren't any stories this week about how Damien Cook was sensationally recalled to the team. Was there? Shout out TB for that observation.
If only one of us had the platform to write such a story.
Well, I mean, I'm not gonna waste my column space doing breaking news stuff. That's not really my remit, nor is it really yours anymore. So neither of us really have that platform. but regardless, Damien Cook is back. Jai Arrow is playing. Let's start with Cook. kind of odd. Thought Pete the Great played pretty well last week. I thought he did a really good job. Like, I do think that the discourse around Damien Cook has borderlined on disrespectful in previous seasons. Like, I think that a lot of people just have taken him for granted, and I don't understand why so many people don't rate him as one of the game's best number nines. He was for a long time. Having said all of that, I don't think it's a coincidence that the forward pack looked a lot more dynamic last week with Pete bringing them onto the ball.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's something we've talked about a bit with hookers over the last couple of weeks, bringing the forwards onto the ball. You know, hooker's not as simple as just shoveling it out to the big lads and having them run. You know, it can be just little subtle things like committing the markers or directing play down a certain edge for a couple of tackles in a row. Like that's the sort of stuff that took Api Korosau from being being a good hooker to being potentially the best hooker in the whole wide goddamn world. So and that was something I thought Mamazoulis did really well. I thought he tackled really well as well, got through a heap of work. But maybe this is just what Cookie needed. Maybe he just needed some time in reserve grade. I don't know how he went. I know he scored a try. I presume he would have done pretty well at that level. So maybe it's just a 1 week fresh up thing. And maybe because Mamazoulis did so well, the Rabbitohs will be more confident in splitting their minutes and kind of getting the best out of both of them. You know, getting Cook playing more like 55, 60 than 80 and giving him the juice to do some of his good stuff.
Yeah, which is, I think, kind of the way forward with them. I don't really understand teams that don't carry a second number nine of the match. I know they've got Havili as well, but I feel like Havili's just better as a running forward at this point. I feel like that's the modern game kind of is better suited to his skill set when he's just doing what he did against Brisbane in sort of short bursts. And then they got Davey Mo'ale back, who had a really impressive game in New South Cup a couple of weeks ago. Played last week, did okay. And then I'm hoping to see a little bit more from him this week. But I feel like Jai Arrow being back will really sort of just lift everyone around them in giving them a little bit more punch and a little bit more go for it. He's starting from the bench. I imagine we're going to get the classic sort of 15-minute good shift from Shaq Mitchell, and then that will be all we see of him in the game. And then Jai Arrow will come in, split some minutes with Havili. Mo'ale will chip in here and there. And if we can get another really good stint, a couple of stints out of Tom like we did last week, feel like against a Melbourne forward pack that's not great, it's not the biggest mismatch in history, which is not something I would normally say when Souths go down to Melbourne to play the Storm.
I like that Arrow's going to be coming back in the middle of the field. I presume that's what they're going to do.
You'd hope so.
I've always liked him more there. He's a big, he's an energy guy as well. Yeah. You know, like he's a real rah-rah-rah type dude. I still like Melbourne for this one. Part of that is banking on history.
Well,
do you want to just run us through South Sydney's history playing against the Storm?
I don't think there's anyone that could be unaware of this at this point, but South Sydney have won a grand total of 0 games in Melbourne in their history.
That's 0 from 18, kids.
It's not great. That's not just at Amy Park. That includes the old graveyard. That includes if they've ever played at Etihad Stadium or the MCG. They're not playing at MCG, but that includes any venue in the state of Victoria, winless.
You know, man, you call Olympic Park, that's the graveyard. That was Melbourne's first home ground there. I'm just going to read to you now the scores of Melbourne versus South Sydney at Olympic Park. 52-6, 44-6, 24-6, 50-4, 48-6, 26-10, and 42-4.
It's not good.
That's fucking brutal, dude.
Yeah, so
It took them 8 years to get into double digits down there.
Hey, you know, it's important. That 50-4 in 2004, by the way, that was the year where Souths had started the year with, I think, 2 or 3 wins out of their first like 4 or 5 games, doing quite well. And then Adam McDougall, who was their best player, tore his ACL in this game as well.
Oh, God. Okay, so of South Sydney's losses down there, which one is your favorite and which one is your least favorite?
So my favorite was the one me, Mitch and Coleman went to, where I was very drunk and just yelling purple cheats at people for 80 straight minutes. And we nearly won the game. That was the 16-12 in May of 2015. With about 5 minutes to go, a kick went up to the sideline. I feel like it was Alex Johnson, but I remember it happening in front of me. It was on the right-hand side. So it was on our right wing. But anyway, there was a kick. It was batted down by Johnson. Bryson Goodwin crosses the stripe, but Johnson steps on the sideline before he jumped and batted it in, and that we would have won the game. And then my least favorite, but I just had a fun night, and that was a fun weekend. My least fun one was because I was not there, and it was also the night that the KB kicked us out, was the Golden Point game a year later. the 15-14 game where Souths were winning with 1 second left. And poor Damien Cook recalled to the starting team, I believe. This was when he'd been elevated from the bench to start at hooker. This is when Madge was doing the weird McInnes stuff. And I think Robbie Farah was involved also. And this was the end of 2016 where Souths had a really poor season. But they strung together, I think, like four. They strung together. After this Golden Point loss, they won all four of their last four games to end the season, all of which Damien Cook played hooker, at starting hooker, and played really well. And, of course, that set the platform for the 17, which wasn't great. And then, of course, 18 onwards, where Damien Cook was one of the best number nines in the game. But his first start was back in the team was this Golden Point loss to Melbourne. And they were up 14-12 with, like, 5 seconds left. And, unfortunately, Damien Cook gave away a penalty. I can't remember whether it was for a lifting tackle or a high tackle, but it was one or the other. And then Cam Smith kicked a penalty goal. And then Cam Smith kicked a field goal in Golden Point.
Mm.
And we watched it in the Aurora because the KB had kicked us out.
Yeah, that's why we don't go to the KB anymore.
Exactly.
Right. 3 1-point losses down there, 2 golden point losses, including 1 2 years ago in 2022 on the last trip.
We had no business winning that game, though, to be fair. That one was like, that was the game where we were down like 18-0 or something, right? And then Latrell kicked the 2-point field goal on the 80th minute to like send it to extra time.
Yeah.
But we had no business at all winning that one. The one that hurts was the finals game the previous year.
Yeah, in 2018.
In 2018, with the 29-28 game where Cam Murray scored a try that was definitely a knock-on in the lead-up, which we got the rub of the green down in Melbourne for the first time ever. And it was like, holy shit, we're going to do this. And then, no, we just didn't. That, if you go back and watch the highlights of that game, that's the one that feels like it was the most winnable, and they threw it away, the 29-28 game. They really should have won that game.
Can they win this one in those little Sailor Boy jerseys?
Surely you and everybody else is at the point now where you want them to win, because I've committed to not only buying but wearing the Sailor jersey for Magic Round.
It depends. Can they fight evil by moonlight? Can they win love by daylight?
Yeah,
can they never run from a real fight? Are they the ones named South Sydney? Will they ever turn their back on a friend? Will they always there to defend? Are they one on whom we can defend? They're the one named South Sydney.
All right, listeners, vote.
Secret powers also new to them. They are
is
the
he
one
reading this
Sydney.
Off his screen, or does he know this off by heart? I'm betting reading off a screen, but I'll be really impressed if you somehow know all the words to the Taylor Moon song.
No, of course I'm reading it. I don't know. Okay. I don't know the words to the Taylor Moon theme song, but I bet Souths do in those jerseys.
I showed my wife the jersey yesterday, and she immediately burst out laughing and then started playing the Taylor Moon song out of her phone. We used to be a serious club that challenged for premiership. Anyway, we're wearing this jersey. And if we win, I will buy it. And I'll get a big Wally Pop, and we'll have a great time at Magic Round.
Yeah. Are you going to tip him?
Fuck it. Sure. Why not? Attaboy. Yeah. Who gives a shit? Nothing I do matters. Nothing any of us do matters. And you know what? South playing in Melbourne rarely matters because it always ends in a loss. But honestly, their forward pack is so bad that I think we have a chance.
I don't think it's as bad as you're making it out. Asofa Solomona beefs it up a little bit. I've liked Welch off the bench for them. I think that's been a good move. And I didn't mind Joe Chan in the middle last week either. Like, he had a tough start, but then he came back really strongly. Just sort of gives him another bigger body who's pretty good on his feet. Melbourne have made a habit of sort of getting into heart attack games this season.
Mm.
I don't know. I would like it if they stayed that way because it's entertaining for me, the neutral.
I don't think they're going to put 50 on us. I will say that.
Yeah, but if Craig Bellamy is Craig Bellamy for a reason, I think he will iron out those kinks in him or kind of die trying, you know. And they are a team with a lot of points in them. They're a team that can score points when they really really need to. And I'm expecting those nice attacking structures that I talk about almost incessantly to really come to the fore again, you know. Eli Katoa, he's someone I talk about a lot. Wrote about him as well this week for ABC Sport, a little bit about his background. He's from a Tongan archipelago that's about 200 miles north of the main island. He's from a village of about 170 people. His whole family still lives over there. He never left that village until he was 17. And now he's sort of the heir to the throne in the great Melbourne Storm back row tradition. You know, there were guys like Hoffman and Proctor and Tohu Harris and Kenny Bromwich and Felice Kafusi and Sikamanu, and now there's Eli Katoa, and he can do so many different things with the ball and without it. And I think every single week he's getting better. And I think he'll be a big attacking focal point for the Storm in this one. I think him and Bloor will be both. So I'm expecting that Storm run to continue, and it wouldn't surprise me if they win this one pretty well.
Sorry, I zoned out like 45 seconds ago. An archipelago.
Yeah.
You mean an archipelago?
Archipelago, yeah. I don't think I've ever heard it said.
Really?
Yeah.
It's archipelago.
I'm not a cartographer, bro. I write the words. I don't say them.
not cartographer.
Well, I've heard cartographer set because of the Halo level, the silent cartographer.
You've never heard the word archipelago set?
I don't think so, man. When would you have it? When did you hear it?
In The Simpsons.
Which episode?
Technically, isn't it technically Monster Island is an archipelago?
No, it's a peninsula.
A peninsula, that's right. Well, then I don't know. I know the word anyway. So,
well, there you go, Mr. Fancy Known Word Man.
Archipelago, your private school system at work. Moving on. Manly, Parramatta. He's not laughing. He looks cranky. Manly, short price favourites.
I didn't know how to say a word. Shoot me.
A guy said Ficard in like a year 12 English class and like everyone just stops.
So, that's good. I like that.
Yeah, Ficard. Like, okay, sure, man. What was the one I fucked up and people got mad about like last year? Was it Maroon? Do people not say Maroon?
I don't remember.
I think it was Maroon. People didn't like
Maroon. Maroon and Maroon is like dance and dance. Like,
oh no, it was the bird. One. It was the plover. And then someone told me, no, it's plover. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure
I'm not calling it a plover.
No, neither am I. That. It's not a fancy bird. It's a working man's bird. It's plover.
The working man's bird. That's damn right. That's a bird that puts on its hard hat every day and goes out to terrorize everyone it sees. You know why? Putting food on the table.
But it's plover family. Anyway, speaking of hardworking birds, Manly hosting the Sea Eagles. Hosting the Sea Eagles. Matt, you're on fire. Hosting the Parramatta Eels.
See,
no love lost there.
That's hubris for laughing at me, for how I say
it actually
that
is.
Particular word.
I have to leave it in as a cautionary tale. And because I can't be bothered editing it out. Just the one game on the Friday, though. 8 o'clock. What am I going to do between 6 and 8? I have no idea.
I don't know. Watch Burke's backyard like our ancestors did.
I don't know if you can still do that, mate. I think they Hulk Hogan'd him from like the archives. So
that destroyed the tape.
There ain't no Burke's backyard here, and there never was. And rightfully so. That dude's a pervert. All right, Manly short price favorites. Parramatta coming off an absolutely embarrassing loss last week. How are you seeing this one shape up?
So this will go one of two ways. Either Manly will come out and absolutely tear the face off Parramatta and kill them to death, and Brad Arthur will probably get sacked soon thereafter, or Parramatta, after what happened last week, dig really deep and find a renewed effort and a renewed intensity in a real show of support for the coach. But I can't see any way in which Parramatta's performance in this game is not a direct reflection of their attitude towards Brad Arthur. Because if they can't fire up after a game like that, I don't know if they can ever fire up for him again. That's how bad last week was, and that's sort of the position that we've gotten to.
Would you say this game is kind of like the Sharks game was for Souths 2 weeks ago?
Probably not as bad, because the firestorm around
the knives certainly haven't been as out as much.
That's it. They're not as sharp. We're only just starting to get into the wheels are only just starting to get in motion for this sort of stuff. We only this week had Parramatta players coming out saying and how much they back the coach and all that sort of deal. And I have no doubt that there's some of them that will go out and play really, really hard. Ethan Sanders debuting at 5'8". It's an interesting one because he's going to Canberra next year. So the Bills have only got him for a little bit. Don't think they sort of loved what they saw from my guy Dejan Arce in the last couple of weeks. So I think they're just going to see what they've got with Sanders. Mike Sivo's back in on the wing after missing a couple of weeks, and Bryce Cartwright's injured. Other than that, it's a pretty similar looking team to what Parra's sort of put out in the last couple of weeks. So I think it very much is I'm trusting you guys to try and dig yourself out of it type of situation. But I don't think they'll be able to. I think Manly will be too good. I think getting back home after two long road trips, including a very tough trip over to New Zealand that would have been really draining, I think that'll be good for them. There's a bit of a vibe around Manly at the minute. And if a team like Canberra were able to cut the Eels apart out wide a couple of weeks ago, and then the Dolphins were able to go through the guts of them the week after that, I feel like a team like Manly, who have so much strike, will have a lot of opportunities to play that sort of nice attacking footy that they've showed at points this year. You know, and I don't think they will have forgotten that first game against Parra this year, which feels like it was only like 2 weeks ago. But yeah, I think that'll be pretty big in their minds too. So I quite like Manly for this one.
Yeah, I forgot they already played. That was a crazy game too. It was a very seesawing affair in that first half. But they get a couple of props back in with Josh Allo and Nathan Brown returning to selection. Which, you know, their forwards did struggle a little bit last week. In that game they ended up winning. But you know, they still had it up in the end. And for Parramatta, so is Bryce Cartwright out injury or is that form?
No, it's injury.
Okay. Okay. I was curious
Fizz,
there. Because like,
I can't remember exactly what it was, but Fizz was tweeting about it.
Yeah. So Madison back on an edge then. And yeah, just like, it's strange. I thought maybe there'd be a few more changes for Parramatta than just the ones that you mentioned, but they're sticking with basically the same thing. Again, it just seems like they're in a little bit of a holding pattern until Mitch Moses comes back. But as I said on Monday, that doesn't excuse how bad their defense was in the second half of that Dolphins game. And you're right. A team like Manly, who are as good at smelling blood in the water as anyone when a team is showing weakness, they love piling the points on against bad teams. They miss 2021 more than anyone. And they'll be hungry for some points here. I think that and they'll also, I think, want to prove a point to themselves with their defense too. I think that Seagulls might end up winning this one pretty handily, probably like 10 to 12 points or something like that.
Yeah, I do too. So I would have grave concerns about that Manly right edge against that Parramatta left edge. You know, Morgan Harper's had some pretty tough days defensively. Sivo has struggled at times defensively as well. And that side is where Manly's real, real speed is. They got Garrick at centre. He's taken to that position much better than I thought he would, I must admit. And then Saab's just lightning. I think that's Turbo's favourite side to run. I think down the left, he probably prefers passing, but down the right, he's very much a runner. And, you know, Big Homole's there too. So they've really got a lot of their running strengths down that edge. If they just run a little bit of shape at Parramatta, I think they'll be able to get a lot of one-on-one matchups, and they've sort of got the players who can really win those matchups a lot. We've talked a lot about Taniela Paseka this year. I think he's starting to enter the Origin conversation. I really do, which
he's been playing great.
Been playing really good footy. I think he's really become like the yardage leader of that pack, and he's playing with a consistency that he probably hasn't had in the past. A couple more big games like this in big spots against high-profile teams, which Parramatta are. You know, I think we could see him coming off the bench for the Blues in a couple of weeks' time. We're getting close to Origin season, so speculation stuff abounds. And with Parra, I just don't know if they're going to be able to break out of the pattern. I don't know if they're going to be able to really explode back to life. I don't know if they've got the sort of petrol to do it as they're currently formulated. So yeah, I like Manly and I like Manly well.
All right. Campbelltown Stadium, 5:30 on Saturday. Again, just the two games on Saturday. Again, 3 till 5. What am I going to do? The answer is be at West Lakes Club, because we'll be at this one. Some big ins and outs for Brisbane. What a roller coaster teamless Tuesday was for them. They get Adam Reynolds back. They get Payne Haas back. They get Dean Mariner back. And no Selwyn Copper.
I was kind of excited, you know, that we were going to get Brisbane
all hands on deck,
fully loaded. Like, let's see how we go. I was going to go to this because any chance I can get to see Walsh in person, I'm going to take. Like, there's almost no one in the league who the different, like, he's great on TV, but in person the jump is really, really noticeable. But they won't give me the full strength Broncos. They won't give me what I want.
No. You know? It's like the full strength Broncos is like Dredrick Tatum coming back to get revenge on Homer Simpson. And I thought the Tigers were going to be Homer Simpson in this game. But yeah, they get spared the full brunt of Brisbane's might, where two guys like Cobbo's been fantastic and Ezra Mamm's arguably been their best player this year. But still, an absolutely star-studded Brisbane team.
Very imposing.
The best prop in the world back and one of the best two or three halfbacks return.
Very much so. And Brisbane have done so well to sort of stay on the tracks when they have had a few blokes injured. Now that they do have a lot more of their top boys back, I am expecting them to try to sort of cut loose a little bit. They've done a lot of the hard work, and I think they'll want to sort of really G it up a little bit. I'm expecting them to win this, like, of course. I'm going to cold train them too.
Here's Taylor rolling the ball in.
Train Cup.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good choice.
Road tip. So yeah, road tip's important. You got to stack them up while you can. I think they'll have way too much for West. Even though I do like some of the changes Wests have made, I quite like Finu getting the start at second row. I thought he was really strong in big minutes against Penrith. I like Bateman going to lock as well, because I think it'll give him a bit more skill in the middle, and it might help tighten up that middle third. You know, Bateman only played lock for Canberra a couple of times, but I always kind of liked him there. I actually thought it suited him a bit more than the edge did. And then they've got Pollet coming off the bench. He's been so strong for them this year, and I like the idea of him coming on once the game opens up a little bit. But Brisbane are Brisbane, you know, and even without Mam and without Cobbo, they have so many weapons everywhere. They really have that zeal. They really have that look about them at the moment. I think they're really going to put the pedal to the floor for this period leading up to Origin. I really think they're going to see how fast the motor can go.
Here's Taylor rolling the ball end on end. He's after it. He might have got it down. He thinks he did. Oh!
Cold Train Cup.
For consecutive weeks. We're double
training.
Look
at this.
Look at us.
You know that movie? You know that movie, Strangers on a Train? I don't, yeah. Because my friend Bert is on the train with me.
That's right. Let's head to the dining car. Yeah, because it's going to be a feast for those Brisbane outside backs in this one. They're going to win this. They're going to win it easily. Again, away tip really important. And if you can get an away team paying $1.20 or whatever the hell they're paying at the moment, I think you got to do it. They might not win. Shrug your shoulders. You move on with your life. But we're 7-0. We're still going. We want to keep being perfect. And as I've said a million times, the Cold Train Cup does not reward bravery. It punishes it. It rewards cowardice. And there's nothing more cowardly than picking a team that probably at least half the comp is going to pick this week. As long as they keep picking the same teams as me, they can't catch up. So let's go.
Yeah, so Solomon Alemolo is debuting on the wing for the Tigers. He's a rugby union convert. I'm pretty sure
this one is the rugby guy, right?
This one is the rugby. It was confusing because the Tigers in their top squad had outside backs named Solomon, Solomona, and Solomone.
Yeah.
And they were all outside backs and they all joined the top squad this year. So took a while for me to get my head around it, but I'm on it now. He's a big thing, definitely. He's a real athlete.
I just pulled his stats up. 196 centimeters, 100 kilos.
He's a big man. Right. Carries the ball well. Has been doing pretty well in reserve grade, but as Brisbane showed last week, they are so good at targeting a weakness, and once they find one, they will go after it time and time and time again. Adam Reynolds is back, so the kicking game's going to be even better than it was last week with Walsh and Mam. And I think Alemolo better be ready for a lot of pressure on Dubu. It's a big spot for him to play in. I hope he goes well, but I've no doubt that Brisbane are going to do their best to get after him.
Yeah, absolutely. Before we move on, sorry, Nick, some real quick breaking news. No Daniel Tupou, Victor Radley, or Mekhele Ravalawa tomorrow.
Oh, wow. Okay, that is big news.
That's NRL Physios posted that 1 minute ago. So Tupou, hyperextended knee, Victor Radley, hamstring strain, and Mekhele Ravalawa, knee soreness. So NRL.com's wasted no time. They've already updated the team list. Jack Bird is into the centers in Jersey 19. Zach Lomax back on the wing, and Michael Jennings is into the centers for the Roosters, with Connor Watson starting at lock and Sia Wong coming onto the bench.
Okay, well, wow, that makes me even more confident for the Dragons. Lomax on the wing, that's been pretty good, you know. And I think Radley might have been the Roosters' best player this year.
He's been very good.
Yeah, he's been really good. I like Watson in the middle of the field, but yeah, that's a big blow. And I don't think Michael Jennings is offering all that much at the minute. So yeah, I'm even more confident about the Dragons now.
Okay, Saturday, 7:35, Cowboys, Panthers, Townsville. This is not a must-win, but it's sort of like, show me something, Cowboys. Show me something.
So Nathan Cleary back for the Panthers, obviously, huge. A big change for the Cowboys as well. Taumalolo drops back to the bench. Griffin Neame starts. I think that's a good move. We talked a lot about how the Cows just not getting a whole lot from their bench at the moment. I actually think starting will suit Neame's style a little bit more. And if they are going to only play Taumalolo for 30 minutes stints, which they seem pretty committed to, it's probably a better use of him if you are wanting to use him that way. And Tom Michele is in on the bench too. And if nothing else, he's a big, strong lad who's going to throw himself around a little bit. But it is hard to see anything other than a big Panthers win, right? You know, they only lost the one game without Cleary, that one to Manly a few weeks ago. Now he's back. They're pretty much fully loaded now. Looking at the 17, I think that is the best 17 they think they've got. I don't think they have any injuries or suspensions at the minute, if I really think about it. So they're very much fully loaded for the first time in a while. And when that happens, it's normally...
Yeah. I love in this whole Penrith dynasty, like an injury crisis is like two guys not playing. It's been fucked.
But I know, but like, see, for any other club, if they lost both their halves for like 6 weeks, like Penrith did in 2022, like the season would be over. And they won nearly every one of those games with Salmon and O'Sullivan in the halves. Like, it's ridiculous. It's offensive.
Yeah, I agree. And O'Sullivan, to be fair, at the time was probably the best non-starting NRL level half going around. But still, you're right. It was very impressive. Yeah. Cowboys cannot be any worse than they were last week. That's absolutely true. Embarrassing. They should be absolutely ashamed of how they played in that game. They were just lost from minute one. I'm surprised there haven't been more. There haven't been any changes. I'm looking at the team sheet now. The ins are four guys, but it's the guys named 18 through 21. So like they're running it back with the same team. I don't understand it.
Tom Michele, new face. Look at him go.
Is that new?
That's because new. He didn't play last week.
Oh, okay, maybe he was 18th man and Gishevsky played in that, so they don't count as an in and an out.
Oh, okay, but anyway, it's more about how they've moved it around, I think, than anything else. Like benching Tom Malolo is a big deal. You know, even if from the outside in, we look at him and we say, like, we're getting close to the end, he's still a titanic figure in that club's history. I think it would be a big move for the playing group. You know, I think that's the sort of thing that's trying to put them all on notice and say, yeah, guys, no one's safe.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I agree with the message it sends, but I think that it's not quite the seismic thing that it could have been even last season. I think it's been pretty tough going for the old war horse this season so far.
And you say there's no more big changes. What other big changes could they make? Like, you look at the rest of that extended bench. It's by Leah Gishevsky, Bitsukane, Jamal Shibasaki, and Jake Clifford.
Mate, get the big red dog in there. Get him in there putting up some bombs.
You're never going to have to sell me on Jake Clifford. All right?
I know that.
You're never going to have to sell
me on Jake Clifford. See how high he can kick that football? Oh.
He can kick it so high.
Exactly.
All right, I'm in.
Put Tom Dearden at lock. In comes Clifford to put up some bombs. Everything's fine.
Sure. How could that not work?
I don't know.
And speaking of bombs, I do think the Cows are in for an air raid. I think Cleary's going to really target Felton Valame, who can be shaky under the high ball, and Drinkwater can be as well. So, yeah. So they best bring their catch in hands.
I considered Coltrane and Penner.
I did too, but I just thought Brisbane were a little bit more of a sure thing because, like, it's up there, it's sweaty, like, you never know what's going to happen.
Plus, Penrith have a road game against South Sydney Homebush next week, so.
Oh, that'll be like a 4-day turnaround though, because they're not getting back from North Queensland until the Sunday. So South might get them underdone.
You think an ambush?
I think you're thinking ambush.
No, I'm not. Well, we can't ambush, mate. We're defending champions. We've won that fixture last year, so don't know what else there is to say. All right, Sunday.
Well, I do want to wrap Dylan Edwards really quickly. I think there's probably something I've underestimated. I don't think we've talked about it, but I think with Cleary out, he's actually taken a much more active role in the team's attack. Not doing anything fancy or not doing anything outside of his own skill set, which is Dylan Edwards' real strength. He knows exactly what he's good at, and he always plays to those strengths. I think he's just done really well. He's just upped his involvement a little bit and made things really really easy on Schneider particularly. So big rap for him.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. I've always been a big Dylan Edwards guy, so that makes sense. I agree with everything you just said. I've never heard of David Armstrong, but he's playing fullback for the Newcastle Knights this week. What do you know about David Armstrong?
Damn right he is. I know that he's playing fullback for the Knights this week. Mm. I know that he has been contracted to the Knights for at least a couple of months now. If not more.
According to the Knights website, his nickname is Davey. So
not Army.
It's that. It doesn't even tell me what his favorite children's TV show was. I'm just gonna assume it's also Dragon Ball Z and Pingu, but we don't know. How am I supposed to make a judgment on that?
Yeah, I must confess, I don't know a whole lot about him. I don't know where he's from. I don't know how long he's been at the Knights. I assume he's
a junior club, the Mungindi Grasshoppers.
Yeah, that's Mungindi.
Oh, is it? There you go. We're back one all.
Yeah. We're back. I had to return to my true strength, naming obscure country towns.
That's true. I love that's come full circle. So yeah, Mungindi, Grasshoppers. There you go.
He's been going okay in Reggie's this year. He's been in the reserve grade team for about three seasons now. I got the feeling that there was that young fellow who's really good in the preseason, Fletcher Sharp. I think he would have played, but I think he's injured at the moment.
Oh, okay.
And I don't think they're ready confident to in what we do the Will Price thing. Yeah. So, yeah. Davey, come on down, my son.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's it's not the easiest game to debut in, but I think there are, you know, it could be worse. I think it'll be a tough game up there against the Finns at Suncorp, but I think that there are, you know, especially when it's not going to be full, there'll probably be what, 25,000-30,000 people there. Like, it's not going to be as hostile as, say, like a full crowd at SeaWorld would be, or mate, playing the Broncos
I'll
up there.
I'll tell you, mate, we could get a monster crowd up there, dude. We really could. Like, the great win last week, they're exceeding expectations. It's Sunday afternoon, a lot of families coming down from the peninsula. Like,
see what Jack Cronin has to say. See what he picks. Mate,
yeah, I don't know. I'm actually quite looking forward to this one. I think we could get a carnival atmosphere.
I love a carnival atmosphere. The Knights are a bizarre team. And Harry, I was speaking to him through the week. Just where our shared enthusiasm for the Pongalus Knights was at an all-time low. I think he's ready. He asked if we should bet on them to win the spoon.
There are a lot of Knights fans who are in a bad place right now after the Pongalus news came out. We haven't really touched on it yet. I think that was one of our infamous, we just finished recording and then it came out.
Ponga update from Peter Parr today, but in true rugby league fashion, they posted an article. I posted a link to a thing on their website and I clicked on it, and then it was a video, not an article. So I just didn't watch it. So I don't know what he said, but
I think he was more dispelling talk that the hip injury that he was carried into the game might have contributed to the foot injury.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. They're on opposite sides of the body. So, you know, I'll take him at their word on that one. But no, like you drop Ponga out of this team, and for a long time too, he's looking at a couple of months on the sidelines. Things could get really bad. They were already pretty bad with him, you know, and now it's looking quite grim.
Yeah, I think I'm just trying to look at positives for the Knights here. I think that if they can get a bit more juice out of Saifidi and Leo Thompson again, I think that it's not like a complete mismatch in the forwards. I think 2 through 5. They've got a fighter's chance there as well. I think Gagai and Best up against Avrilo and New is not, I don't think that swings wildly one way or the other. And then Margio and Tuala against Bostock and Izako. Again, I think that's kind of a bit of a wash, but I just think that the overall package of the Dolphins and the way they're playing at the moment is going to be a bit too much. I just think, especially the way they were so up-tempo and just so willing to throw the ball around last week in the second half against the Eels. I don't know if the Knights can keep up with that if the Dolphins get a roll on, which would be my concern.
I tend to agree. I think they'll look to play a similar way. I think they'll really try and push the pace, attack through the middle with their speed as much as they can, you know, really try and stretch the Knights. And like we talk about it with Jacob Saifidi and Leo Thompson, like it's only happened a couple of times this year, you know, and I don't know. I just don't know if the Knights are going to have enough to trouble the Dolphins. You know, it's the difference between a team really high on confidence and a team that sort of lost their way a little bit. So if the Broncos weren't such a standout Coltrane tip this week, I would have taken the Finns.
I would have thought about it too, just to get them, tick them off the board, but also home team. I needed some away teams. Okay. And finally, the Raiders. Again, I went to this game like 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
The Raiders are fighting the Sharks again. And again, no, with missing their key playmaker in Jamal Fogarty. Tough
yeah.
one. We'll get to news section in a second, but Sharks also missing one of their key playmakers in Braden Trindle, Daniel Atkinson, who's, I think Sarah's picked as her like young player to watch 2 consecutive seasons on the previous show. She messaged me on Monday and said, finally, my Daniel Atkinson prediction can come to fruition. It's a shame it had to happen in such bad circumstances.
She's done it.
Yeah.
So the Fogarty stuff has really knocked the wind out of a lot of Raiders fans. Someone made the point to me the other day that it's because he's a late bloomer, it's the kind of season that he'd sort of been waiting his whole life for. You know, this is a Raiders team that with him there had a lot of upside and looked to be pretty competitive across the league. And then without him, like it's tough to come back from. You know, I like Kyo Weeks as a player. I do. But I think he's much more of a runner and sort of a support player than he is a creator. And to that end, I think the way for Canberra to win this is to throw structure out completely. I think it's got to be offloads. I think it's got to be weird tries. I think it's got to be all based on physicality and effort and attacking up the middle third of the field. I did a story with Kyle Weeks in the preseason and I said, what's your favorite thing about the Canberra playing style? And he said, I love that when there's a quick play the ball or an offload, there's no rules. You can do whatever you want. And I really want him and the rest of the team to really sort of play with that same mindset, because I think it's the only way that they can kind of handle the Sharks. I'm hoping that because that first game against the Sharks was only a few weeks ago, the memory of it will still be very fresh in Canberra's mind. You couple that with wanting to make amends for what happened against Brisbane. They are a team that generally bounces back pretty well after big losses. So I'm hoping that can sort of get them going there. Playing at home as like, they've only won one game on the road this year, which was the opening round against Newcastle. Apart from that, they've been quite strong at home, but then sort of struggled to travel a bit. So maybe there's a little bit of a boost there. Danny Levi's still there, which I'm not wild about, but Chevy Stewart's still there, which I'm glad about, because I think that'll give him a big confidence boost. Trindle's a big out for Cronulla. I think they've done quite well this year because they've played off him and Brayley a little bit more, and it just makes them more dangerous because they have more creativity about them. I think I know Atkinson more as a fullback than a 5'8". I might be wrong about that. But I do think this is a better Cronulla team than we've seen in the last couple of years. We won't get to test that theory for a while yet, but I like those changes they've made in the forward pack with Talakai coming off the bench and Hazelton starting. And they should get this done. I'm tipping Canberra anyway.
Of course.
Because I think they need me right now. You know, they need the sort of strength that only an idiot with a podcast can provide.
Well, are you going to go down?
Maybe. I'm tossing it up. Yeah, it'll depend on how Friday and Saturday go.
The boys in the black, white, and blue. They'll get it done, I think. But yeah, I think it'll be close though. I do. They're not going to get flogged. Canberra rarely, if ever, get flogged 2 weeks in a row, right?
Look, I want that to be true. So
Ricky Stewart backs the wall Canberra version, not like mid-2000s Canberra.
Yeah. With Trindle out, I'm expecting Hines to take a lot more control.
Me too.
But that has been an avenue to success in the regular season for the Sharks for some years now. I expect them to really go after Chevy Stewart again. I would have really liked Albert Hopewadi to come back on the wing for James Schiller. You know, Schiller's a capable player and good in attack and all that. But I think because they have Stewart and Savage at the back five, and they're not the biggest wingers, I think they needed at least one person in that back three who was quite strong in yardage and had, if not size, definitely some real physical strength to them. Albert Hopewadi's got that. Schiller doesn't so much. I'm also worried about what's going to happen if Mulitalo gets one-on-one with Schiller, because defense isn't really Schiller's strong point. So there's avenues out there for the Sharks to attack. But I'm sort of hoping that Canberra respond with one of those inexplicable wins that they're able to.
I don't think it's beyond them. Nowhere. I definitely don't think it's beyond them. So I
would like that very much.
Yeah, me too. For your sake. Other than that, I don't really care. But yeah, I think
you go for Cronulla. Of course you care.
Okay.
Simi Radradra trying the chip and chase. Oh no, it's Simi Radradra. Radradra's away, Simi Radradra.
Oh, this will be interesting.
Oh yes, it will. Yes,
Simi Radradra.
Oh, he's absolutely buried it. Radradra.
Okay, news time.
Bit on.
Let's do Trindle first, because we just talked about that game. So Braden Trindle has been stood down, is probably going to be suspended for a few weeks after being pulled over on Monday morning for an RBT and blowing, apparently, a breath analysis reading of 0.124, which is quite high. There was talk about other illicit substances in his system, a positive result for that.
He's driving on a suspended license as well. Just
a very disappointing after what has been such a great start to the Sharks season. And what was such a great night for them on Sunday, celebrating Rocky Road's debut, and they had a few old boys in town, I believe, for the Paul Green Cup and all that stuff. And yeah, it's a damn shame. It's a damn shame. That's what it is.
It's just dumb. It's just really, really dumb on his part. And he was having such a good season too. I think he could be sidelined for like maybe a month or something like that, if not longer. And yeah, so it's quite a setback for the Sharks, because his development is really important to them.
Yeah, again, I don't really care what people do in their free time, but I do care if you get behind the wheel of a car and drive, or you're still inebriated by the effects of said things. So that's really why I'm disappointed with it. I look forward to whatever suspension he gets being met with the usual whataboutisms regarding both Todd Carney and Mitchell Pearce from idiots on the internet.
We gotta let it go, man. You know, the Carney stuff.
Let it go.
10 years ago now.
They will, like, I guarantee you, I don't know when they're going to announce what the suspension is for Trindle, but if he gets less than either Mitchell Pearce or Todd Carney got, we're going to get so many replies in the comments about
those.
Did you
see Todd Carney was on James Graham's podcast the other day, and he said that if he got a preseason in, he thinks he could still play in the NRL?
Do you believe him?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, of course not.
Fair enough. And probably the most explosive story of the year, I would say, has dropped overnight. In the Australian, it's a story about Jackson Taupinay, the former young gun at the Bulldogs, who I believe was their player of the year in 2001, is now taking legal action against the club over this wrestling punishment that was handed down on him for being slightly late to a training session at a wrestling school in Smeaton Grange. And then he never played first grade for the club again.
Yeah, this was a pretty confronting read. I think a lot of people are making assumptions about this story based on the headline. Hmm. I think if you go and read it and you see what Taupinay is alleging happened, I think it'll change your view of it a little bit. Footy training is meant to be hard. You know, this is a tough sport that everyone plays, and you know, there are gladiatorial elements to it, and toughness and resilience and accountability are all very, very important parts of playing first grade. I think everybody understands that. But the fact that other players sort of said that this was beyond the pale, what happened to him after this session, that's the thing that really sort of pricked my ears up, you know?
I'm glad you mentioned that, because that's exactly what I was going to say. Because sometimes there's some particular types of stories that come out where you can make judgments based on just reading a headline. And then there's other stuff, usually stuff about bullying or misconduct or anything like that, where reading a headline is simply not enough. And I would really encourage anyone that's had a knee-jerk reaction to this to be like, oh, footy training's tough. What did he expect? Oh, he's suing the club because he had to go run some extra laps, all this stuff. I'd really encourage you to seek out a hard copy of The Australian or get a login from someone or just pay for it yourself and read the story. Because if you actually read the story from today, it's pretty awful stuff what happened to him. Not just the account of what happened, but also the quotes from other players, as you said, saying how uneasy they felt at the situation and just the general sort of apathy with which he was treated after the event. He never played first grade for the Bulldogs again. I'm not going to read the whole story because it'd take about 20 minutes to read, but it goes into about how he went home crying to his family and his girlfriend. He felt humiliated. He felt bullied. He felt completely ostracized. He felt torn down mentally and physically, just completely broken down as a human being after what happened to him. And I'm not naive, right? I understand that footy training is hard, and I understand that so much hard work goes into this. And I understand that this is almost certainly not the first instance of something like this happening to a player. But it is the first instance of a player standing up for themselves and going, you know what, this is kind of fucked.
Mm.
And I don't think that we should be immediately poo-pooing that, as I've already seen some people. I've already seen some quotes from some people in the media say, oh, this will start a slippery slope of all these class actions against clubs for players being treated poorly. Well, if they're being treated as poorly as how Taupinay is alleged to have been treated in this story, then I hope more players come forward. Because reading this story and reading the absolutely minor infraction that he is alleged to have committed, which led to this punishment, makes it even more insane to me. So he was supposed to be there from 8 for strapping for an 8:30 start for this wrestling thing. And he didn't need strapping. So he interpreted that as not needing to be there at 8 o'clock for strapping. He got there at 10 past 8, told the club he was going to be there at 10 past 8. So still 20 minutes early for the actual training session. And that was interpreted as being late. Never had an infraction before. As I said, was the club's player of the year either the year before that or 2 years before that?
He was New South Wales Cup player of the year. And the thing was, Taupinay was quite known for having a great attitude. He really loved Canterbury. There's a video floating around at the minute where he's talking about how much he loves it. He was an Australian schoolboys captain in 2019. This was not like some guy with a history of bludging or anything like that. This was a real, real player of the future.
Yeah, and people go, they're supposed to be tough men, that we're supposed to be, you know, grinding these guys into being the best physical version of what they can be. Like, we're trying to win football games. Canterbury need to do everything they could to turn the culture and all that stuff around. Well, it seems like some other people were affected by it. And the story also goes into Raymond Fatala Mariner's involvement in terms of like how other players were coming to him as a leader of the club, as the club captain, and voicing their concerns about what was going on. And as a result, he was frozen out of the club as well and has gone on to go to the Dragons a year and is playing quite good football for the Dragons this year, I would say. And when this incident occurred was with about 7 rounds left in the season when the Dogs were not doing very well. They were sitting 16th on the ladder when this happened. And people go, oh, you've got to do things like this because hard times make hard men and all this stuff. Well, I pulled up what happened after that day. They played 6 more games to finish the season after this incident. They lost 5 of them and conceded 220 points. And the game they won was against the shell of the Dolphins in Golden Point. So, yeah, it really, really lit a fire under them, guys. Great job. Great job.
Yeah, I think we're approaching a sort of a changing of the guard when it comes to attitudes towards training, especially. I think this and the Keith Titmus incident.
Which is also mentioned in this story.
It is mentioned in the story. And I think that is a marker of how attitudes do need to change at some point. There's some other quotes in the story. Older players like Willie Mason, Josh Morris, talking about the attitudes of training when they came into the league. And that's all well and good, but Willie Mason came into first grade 25 years ago. You know, Josh Morris came into first grade nearly 20 years ago. Times change, people change. Mentalities change. The way society runs is changed. The way we think and feel and our awareness of these sorts of things, it all changes, you know? And sometimes I don't know if coaches are adaptable to that. Sometimes I think there's some coaches that are a bit stuck in the past or in the old way, or just, you know, if you work hard and if you yell at blokes, that'll fix everything. And it's maybe that's not the way anymore. And maybe things like this can go away to changing that.
Yeah, well said. I completely agree. And again, just encourage people to go read that story.
Yeah, I must say I hate this sort of shit. I hate that, like hazing and punishments and stuff like that. Like, of course, there's a very minor place for it, but something like this where it seems to have really broken something inside of a young man who, by all accounts, is a very good person and was a very good footballer is horrible to see.
Over what, being 20 minutes early for training instead of 30? Ridiculous. It'll be interesting to see what happens with the fallout of this stuff. Obviously, there's still plenty of details that I'm sure that you and I and everybody else that's read this stuff today doesn't know. But this is far from the last we've heard of this. And I do hope that another club, I mean, if he wants to ever play rugby league, and I do hope that another club does pick him up, but I feel like this action has kind of signed his own death warrant in a way. I feel like other clubs will be kind of, and I hope I'm wrong. I really hope I'm wrong, but I really hope I'm wrong, but I kind of worry that like this could have some really adverse effects for him.
But you think about some of the other blokes that have got a chance, you know, and guys who were run out of various clubs for being lazy or having a bad attitude or something like that. I'm sure things like this have happened to other players in the past and they've ended up leaving clubs as a result, you know?
Yep.
So if playing footy is something he wants to do, I would like to think there would be someone that could find a home for him.
Yeah, I hope so too. Okay, we don't have time to talk about Kane Elgey returning to rugby league.
Is he actually?
Yeah, he's back playing for the I had it up in front of me a second ago. Playing for the Toogan Seahawks in the Gold Coast A competition.
Is he really? That's actually a really cool. That's a really cool story.
I was a big Kane Elgey guy. I always felt he got a pretty raw deal. I thought he was a talented player.
He was talented, and Manly wanted to keep him when he had his year there. But he just said he fell out of love with the game. He didn't want to play anymore. Just sort of lost that spirit for it. So if he's got it back, even if it's just playing A grade with Tugan, like that's great stuff.
What if Aiden Caesar gets a slight knock? He's out for a couple of weeks.
Oh my God.
Benji picks up the phone and we get LG and LG in the halves together.
Wouldn't that be something?
Wouldn't that be
something? Life would be good.
It really would. Really would. Now I just need Kate Custer to come back and I'll ask for nothing more. What's Kate Custer up to?
Is he still over at Wigan? I want to say.
Sure. Why not? According to this, Southard. There you go.
There you go.
Yep. Hope he's doing well.
They're mad for Cust on the streets.
Hey, Cust is only 25 even now. Plenty of time to come
really?
Back. Yeah.
Oh, good on you, Cade.
Keep doing your thing. Oh, he's in the south of France having a good time. Good on him.
Oh, what could be better?
Exactly. All right. Before we get out of here, give a quick shout out to people in the top 2 tiers on our Patreon subscription service. If you'd like to support us, patreon.com/everybookies, you get access to our Discord server, extra show every week, merch discounts, plenty more. Our Greatest Games is live. Sorry to all the Canberra fans who were waiting for like several weeks for Greatest Games, and then it was one of the most heartbreaking nights of your life. But congratulations to our Sharks fans who thoroughly enjoyed it. Yeah. Thank you to a perverted female listener. Sup, Chris Abnell, Dave, Stu, Stupid Sexy Hines, your Dally M God, the Tortured Bulldogs fan department. AAA, not trying to be first. I'm screaming at Jamal Fogarty getting injured. Adam Small, Alien versus Predator, Broncos legend, Adam Reynolds, Bruce the Piding Pong, Butsy, Chevy to the levee, but the Levi was dry. Yeah. Chewbacca Snuffleupagus, Dan Carlinane, David, Detachable Benthany, and anonymous backer, Down and Dirty Bungard Butts, RIP, Ed Burton. Edwards given immediate compassionate release to return to Slytherin. I'm me. Jason Joe, Joel Wrigley, John, kicks outs out of the comp. Down to two again. Lachlan Hancock, Mads Taylor's version, Matthew Duggan, Mr. Beefy, Morgan Watkins. My name is Nick Campton, and rugby union is my favorite type of rugby. And the ding ding dong is hard and I'm sad. Never trendy. Parramatta are a bunch of soft cocks. Don't give them the fucking ball. Sami Army, Paul Mac 78. Push it up. Manly, Reese Brown, RIP the cat. Rowan Rodrigo, Roxanne Clark. See you in Vegas. Shunter, I'm saying nup for the Coltrane Cup. Swap Souths for Norths. Okay, we're back to three. Ty, the Black Vegetable, the Brisbane Sniper, Thor was Westlife Podcast. West Tigers are back, baby. And ZZZ kicks outs out of the comp. Sunglasses emoji. Thank you so much for your support to everyone in the lower tiers and everyone who just listens. Thank you as well.
Perverted female listener, reach out because of the Terry Hill stuff. Your turn for What About This Bloke has been pushed back to next week. So yeah. Please reach out and give us a name and we'll talk about it next week.
All right. We will have a bumper show for you guys on Monday, a full 8-game recap. Have we ever done that before?
I'm sure it's happened at some point.
Full eight. Oh, magic, post magic round.
Probably.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it would be. We didn't do a show on Saturday morning at magic round, presumably.
If we did, this is the first I'm hearing of it.
Same here, buddy. Same here. All right. I hope everybody has a great day tomorrow. Great weekend. Enjoys the footy. Say goodbye, Campo.
Goodbye, Bertrand.
That's goodbye from me.